6 o'clock, we have quorum. I'm very disorganized right now. There. Tracy DiZenzo, District 1.
Jane Duronski, District 6.
Chris Chilowski, District 3. Andrew Waltz, District 7.
Craig Klein, District 4.
Andre Schlager, Chair in District 7.
Kevin Hastings. I am the Vice Chair and I represent the at-large seat.
Okay, awesome, guys. Do we have any modifications to the agenda? This is our first consent agenda. So, just a reminder, anything to be removed from the consent agenda by a similar request. And I then put it on the April agenda. No?
I don't have anything.
No. I'll move approval of the agenda as submitted.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you, Virginia. All those in favor of approving the agenda?
Virginia Wilson.
All those opposed?
Oh, sorry.
All those abstaining? Okay, thank you. Are there any modifications to the minutes?
Repaired fence is still going to look like an awful fence. So
well, is it
a way to just
retire these? Go up and be torn right down, for example. It's pretty bad right now, and we're happy that department staff is moving quickly to get it fixed.
And an eyesore.
Yeah.
But the really detracts from what is otherwise a beautiful spot for us. They're also a little kid I have that overlooked a couple years ago going to the
Okay.
down the street.
Yeah, we've had everything from like a lookout spot to even closing off that part of the street to drivers, which is kind of, well, people have ideas, but at the very least, we're just happy that it's being repaired, and we'll continue to look at CIP funding to see if we can get, if there's ideas the board has for how can we make it beautiful and somewhere where people can go and enjoy it, then please let us know, and we're happy to look at that. The other couple things were, we're going to be announcing next week an expansion of the family reunification program. This is a pilot program that is currently in Ocean Beach and Oklahoma. It really serves to help homeless individuals get connected to family members. It's one of the cheapest ways that we've found to get people off the streets. Oftentimes, people are running from bad situations or somehow get off the path into homelessness. And the Downtown Partnership and some other groups have had some success in simply calling these people's families and building that trust with them and seeing who within the family might take them into their homes to get them off the street. They've had a really big success rate, so we're happy to see that expansion. It's one of many things. Obviously, we have the walking patrol that's been beefed up here in OB, and alongside the family reunification program, we'll see that that will help our officers when maybe their assistance is not the right touch for that individual. So that'll be coming out next week. The other thing I wanted to mention, since it came up last month, was short-term vacation rentals. I sat down with Seamus, and I also spoke with Kevin, and got a lot of good insight and information from him. So thank you, Kevin. I got an update from Seamus, and he's assuring me that something will get done this year. We're not kicking the can down the road. We want to get it done quick. But they're in heavy discussions right now with the platforms and getting something that's legally viable and electorally possible. Given last night's results, we're still looking at how that pans out and what that means for pushing something through this year. So, I did want me to let you know they're in discussions, and now that we're past Tuesday, we have a little bit more clarity on what's possible to get something done. So, I wanted me to let you know that there's no specific time frame, like this spring or summer, but you did say it's not, it's going to get done this year. So, I wanted to address that since it was brought up last time.
Really quickly, I appreciate that. I was going to ask, actually follow up on that today, and I wasn't in the meeting, so could you just elaborate a little bit more on, I understand the timing and questioning the clarity, but could you elaborate a little bit more about what that discussion included in terms of Ms. Campbell's plans for the future?
Yeah, I mean, to be frank, she's been behind the computer, like, drawing up plans herself. She's very adamant about getting something done, and I obviously wasn't in those meetings with Seamus, but they are talking with the platforms and making sure that they can get something. Obviously, there's going to be a challenge from the platforms right away, so working with them to see what is even legally possible without having, because the last thing we want is to propose something and then it just gets challenged in court. Mm-hmm. We don't have an enforceable mechanism. So we're looking at the options. Seamus is knee-deep in it, and the council member asks them every hour what's happening. So she's really, really passionate about it, and we hope and we're pretty certain something will come forth on that this year.
Is it safe to say it's one of the main priorities?
Yeah, I would say so.
So Barbara Bree better get to business on this. She should have some spare time on her hands now. And neither of the possibilities for the next mayor are friendly to the neighborhoods being for neighbors. So. Stuff always takes longer than we got to move on that.
Do you have any details at all in terms of what any substantive proposal might require?
I don't know that I'm able to speak about it. I've heard conversations about what it would look like in terms of making tiers for folks. I haven't been in the details, so I really apologize. I can't give you specifics. But it's been an ongoing conversation. And James wanted to let you know that they've been having ongoing conversations with the platforms to see what that eventually will look like. I can follow up with you, Craig, and get you.
Okay.
If you have specific questions, I can put you in touch with Seamus and make sure we answer those for you.
Has there been any talk of maybe enforcing the existing zoning regulations? Yeah, that's part of it. And obviously, compliance officers is a big part of the budget discussion. It's ongoing, too, so yeah, we're looking at that as well.
We have an acquaintance that is losing the apartment that they're staying in because it's being converted to short-term vacation rooms here in town. While you folks are trying to decide what to do, you're coming to us and asking us for money to build housing for low-income people, but yet you're allowing the city to convert low-income housing so that people don't have a place to live. And I guess my question is, when we have cities all up and down the coast that seem to be able to implement a plan and make it work, why can't San Diego? Why can't they just take one of these other plans and do it?
Yeah, fair point. I mean, part of the discussion is looking at coastal zones differently. Ocean Beach, Mission Beach, Pacific Beach are a huge part of that. The council is very aware that the coastal areas are a different breed, and so we're looking at that closely. Again, I've been working on every detail of it. James probably has a much better insight on that.
I think Terry, we can commit to asking this question every meeting.
Yeah,
so
I
maybe there's a thread that just, we can start.
I'm fine with that. I think I've seen James behind the scenes working on stuff, and I know he's on it. And Kevin helped a lot, giving some info on OB specifically. So that was super helpful, at least in providing a framework of like what are the things out there we need to do. So yeah, I appreciate that.
I think when the time's appropriate, if we could get a thread of sorts, because I received some correspondence, you've been in touch with Kevin, now we're talking about George, maybe we could just get a thread going when it's appropriate,
yeah,
so that we can get those updates all of us on a weekly basis.
Lastly, pedestrian safety, I think you heard from Mandy Havlick and Ashley Lewis with PTA, Mobile Elementary School, that's safety issues around crosswalk safety. We just got a proposal today to try to figure out some sort of partnership between the city and the school district, beef up crosswalk safety throughout the school district. Something we just got a meeting with them tomorrow to try to figure out what that would look like. But I wanted to bring that up since that's something that the board supported in the letter, and so we're actively pushing that.
Would that be something the school district could fund, crossing guards?
I don't know. I think so. We're also talking with PD about potentially using RSVP folks, and they've seemed open to that. But yeah, that's something that we're ironing out and will be set soon. The last thing was the Midway Project. We put out a good Q&A on our Facebook and on the council members' website, and it goes through and really kind of outlines what the vision is and some of the misconceptions about what the project is. So I encourage you to look at that. I'll send that over to you if you haven't already seen it. But it lays out a pretty good idea of what's going on. Obviously, Midway has been neglected and has been kind of fallen behind in terms of other places in San Diego. So we'd really like to see that upgraded and modified to meet the modern economy. And we think there's a way to do it. Obviously, the height limit is a sensitive topic for the council member and for a lot of our residents, and so she's going to be working a lot this year. If it gets through the council, will be on the ballot in November for voters to decide and weigh in with their vote on whether or not that project should go through.
Do you know what happens with the Orchard Apartments?
Not specifically. I know that they're on a list of facilities, buildings, that are set to expire at least. So that's a conversation that, as the RFP in June is out and it will be ready in June, that will be part of the discussion about what happens to those buildings. I believe that's on the list. And on the Q&A, I think it's there. If it's not, I'll make sure it is. That's a great point. We'll make sure, because there is a bulleted list of all the different buildings that are currently set to expire in terms of their lease. So that's going to be a timeline issue. If the project goes before the voters, if the voters approve it, then that would be part of the discussion is what happens to those facilities. Other facilities like Dixieline are also in a similar situation. So timing the new development, either with or without those buildings, is going to be part of that discussion.
And the RFPs you said are due in June, or you're out for RFPs in June?
I believe question. Terminology, I'm new to it.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure the terminology was the RFP is out until June.
Okay. So people can submit that until June.
Until June.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. We'll follow up then.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
If there's any questions, happy to take them.
Yeah. And then just send me that Q&A.
Yep. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Cool. Do we have any non-agenda public comments?
Virginia does.
I'd like to point out that the city's having an Arbor Day again this year. They made part of April, and there's a flyer on the table there. If you need to maybe take a picture of it, this is the end of the
Thank you. Okay, cool. So we're moving on to the consent agenda, I guess. So if we just need a motion to approve it, and then we can pass it.
I move to approve the consent.
Thank you,
I'll second that.
Thank you, Kevin.
Awesome.
And I would just like to give Craig a round of applause, though, because they did try to charge us $300 for the PO box, and
It wasn't that far. They were quite accommodating.
That's more than half of our budget every year is our PO box. That's just crazy.
Okay. Cool.
So vote.
And then
all in favor.
Okay, all in favor. All in opposed. All those opposed, all those abstaining. Okay, so thank you. And then I'm
going to
turn it over to Tracy and the Outreach Committee for the first action item.
Yay. So most of you know that we've been kind of trying to get the planning board out into the community a little bit more. And one of the items that we had thought about doing is very similar to what like Jen or the police do, which is a one-on-one with your planning board member. So we had come up with this idea that we could hold a bi-yearly one-on-one meet your planning board member. We could do it in conjunction with Peninsula because there are a lot of community members that we have that, you know, they think that they live in OB, but they don't really live in OB, but they're part of Peninsula, you know. So, I mean, we're one and the same. We're all kind of, you know, we're sister little towns. So Mandy, who is our liaison to the planning board, has agreed to sit for one of the sessions. Jenna and I will sit for one of the sessions. We figured it would be like, what did we figure? Like a three hour time period at Taimana. And we were guessing to, you know, we were thinking about doing 9 a.m. to 12, but if you guys have differing opinions on that, we're open to that. And it would be April 18th would be our first one. And like I said, it would be twice a year, and we would just put it out to the community through social media and whatever and say, hey, if you want to meet a planning board member and ask us what we do, or if you have any strong feelings about anything, come and discuss it with us. Of course, there's Brown Act things that we need to be concerned about when we meet people and what we talk about, but we want to be available to the community. When I joined this board, there was a lot of mystery behind it. Like, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know it existed for a long time. You know, and this is the thing that we really want to do is encourage community participation as much as we can. And many people are terrified to come here and speak in non-public agenda. So this would be a good chance for them to actually have a face-to-face meeting with people, maybe feel a little bit more comfortable, you know, airing whatever concerns they have for the community. So again, we thought that the first date would be April 18th, which was a Sunday?
Saturday.
It's a Saturday at Taimana between 9 and 12. And if you're interested in doing it, we could divide it up to two different sessions where there's like a 9 to 10:30 and then a 10:30 to 12 or, you know, whatever. But I was hoping that we could get at least two planning board members from here and then two from Peninsula and then for the first half and then rotate. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I would even, you know, just agendize it and post it on our website to even further Brown Act stuff just to protect ourselves, even though it's just the two of you guys from our board and then two of them. But I would just take that extra stuff.
Okay.
Why
not? Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I want to publicize it to death because I think it's really important.
Possible, Yeah, that would be my only.
And then, you know, Jenna and I were highly social, hyperactive individuals, so, I mean, we would be perfectly fine doing the full 2 hours, but this is a way for the community to meet other members of the planning board, not just us. So if you guys want to participate, that's great. If you don't, then that's great, too. Yeah. So I'll send out an email, if this passes, I will send out an email, and then I will request for volunteers, and the more the merrier, I think. Yeah?
I think it's a great idea. I'm unfortunately supposed to be in Australia that day, so, but I do think it's a good idea. The only thing I would throw in, that we all be conscious of speaking on behalf of the board or behalf of our
Yes, absolutely.
Just as a reminder.
Yeah, we had a little bit of, you know, practice at doing that at the last year's Chili Cook-Off Street Fair thing. So we had, you know, a number of us that were working really hard to stay within the Brown Act and, you know, not violate any terms of agreements. And, you know, so, yeah, I think we're all adults and we're all very responsible people, so we can manage that.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. And then, you know, we were thinking, you know, we could include handouts from city things, or, you know, how does the city work, or what, you know, it's just so that people can walk away feeling like they've learned something instead of just a gripe session.
I actually have a suggestion on that.
Okay.
Which would be, you know, the city development services puts out bulletins on various kind of like little things that you don't need permits for. And getting some of those and having those available to hand out might be kind of a helpful thing. You know, things happen like fences and garden walls and things. There's bulletins on all that stuff.
For non-permit things. Yeah, if we could get a hold of stuff like that, that would be great. I mean, it's, you know, this is purely to educate the community and to let them know who we are and what we do and, you know, how they can participate. So
it's a great idea.
The more participation, yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Do we have any discussion from the community about it? Any questions? Or any more discussion from the board? Is there a motion?
I'll move it to
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Thanks, Christoph.
All those opposed? All right. All those abstaining? All right. Great. Motion passes.
All right.
Okay. Our next presentation up. I'll be giving. The city, unfortunately, didn't make it out, but I spent about 30 minutes on the phone with the. Do you have the grant history presentation?
I do.
Cool. But I spent 30 minutes on the phone with the guy, Lee Friedman, at the city, who put this presentation together, and we walked through it slide by slide, and I asked questions. Hopefully, I tried to think of what you guys would ask. Hopefully, I got them all.
I think that's ours, right?
Yeah, that's the SDG&E one. I have it, too. There's the city one. I may have just sent
it in a link. Can I go vote?
Yeah, go vote. Okay. Go vote.
Should be the city of San Diego, the franchise.
This is the second one?
Yeah, that's the SDG. But they sent me a new one today, which is also on there. So,
yeah,
use this.
The one right above it. Yeah, that one. Right of way. So, you know,
they're either undergrounded or poles, but it is the public right-of-way, so the city collects a fee, a franchise fee, so that SDG&E will then put in all their equipment and then deliver the gas to us.
Mm-hmm. And electricity.
That's how it works. We're not paying for electricity from them, we're paying for the delivery, is how Lee described it to me. So yeah, this is the public right-of-way. What is the public right-of-way? Next slide. We've had two 50-year terms signed ever since 1920. SDG&E has been providing us our electricity. This is the second 50-year franchise fee agreement that we signed with them, again, in 1970. He was, like, really excited to talk about this and knew so much.
Love it.
Talk about this with everyone and just going on.
Love it.
In 2002, the city upped our franchise fee so that we could start undergrounding the utilities. So part of our bill each month goes straight to undergrounding the utilities. So that's why we have different. I think we pay directly. The direct franchise fee cost to us is about 2.25% of our bill, and the franchise fee that SDG&E pays is about 1.1% of the bill. But it all goes. Is the next slide? This is more history stuff. All right. At the bottom of your energy bill, you'll usually see like a taxes and fees section, and so we have 3% of the fee that just goes straight into the general fund. So this is then used for projects. Some of the about 24-25% of it is directly earmarked for environmental improvement projects, environmental protection projects, and then the 4.5% that we pay for the franchise fee goes direct to undergrounding all of our utilities. More of what I'm saying, we do pay a higher franchise fee than a lot of cities in California, but. Like I said, most of it goes either directly to undergrounding or straight back into the city. The city isn't looking to do another 50-year deal, is what Lee told me. This is more history. In the mid-90s, the city started averaging about like 25 to 30 years. So they certainly don't want to do a one-year contract with SDG&E, but they're not looking to do a 50-year contract either, is what he told me. Yeah. So we're one of the only five cities that actually does have an expiration date. If any of the other cities, I guess the 29 cities, wanted to cancel or look for other service providers, they would have to municipalize the electricity, if that's the right conversation. Okay, next slide. So these are both of the franchise fees. They make about $6.8 million a year, $6.3 million. And this is just a graph over the years of the franchise fees we've collected. Next slide. So it is... and this is the breakdown of the budget. So like I said, 24% is earmarked for environmental projects, and then the rest goes to the general fund. So lifeguards, police, repaving our roads, this is all what it's paying for. Okay, so this is actually interactive. You guys all have this link. So if you go back to this slide, you can, and I can send this link to anyone who wants. You can pull this up, and it'll tell you how far along they are in the undergrounding process. So it's interactive. It's cool. We are not far along in the undergrounding. Undergrounding of utilities has been completely mapped out. So if you want that information as well of when undergrounding is going to happen in our neighborhood. I can email it.
Yeah. Let me wait till after. So there is a few areas that do show as completed on here, and one was just on my blog. But
you disagree?
they paved the road. There's still power lines. There's still utilities overhead. So do you have in the future, they do some additional work to get rid of those things? We see the underground schedule. And then it looks the same. So I hope somebody has an answer for that.
Kevin, do you know if they're electrical or cable? because the cable lines are still, I mean, we have electric and cable above our house.
Well,
so
I hope they're doing both.
All right.
Yeah,
okay.
I know.
Okay. All right, so they're obviously looking at other cities. Chula Vista just went through a franchise fee to see, you know, what's possible for us. So Chula Vista just did a 10-year term with automatic extensions if SDG&E keeps up their end of the bargain and does everything they're saying. They also got a one-time payment from them, and they got them to create parks along its transmission corridor. And parks are good. So this is like what might be possible, but I'm sure the city is also going to negotiate something that's much different. But they are seriously looking at this. Okay, cool. Next slide. So this is the project timeline. So the franchise fee should draft come in April, so next month. So that's when we'll finally see what's come of it. But right now the city is asking us for feedback and to fill out a survey, which I also have a link to, which we'll put on our website tonight and Facebook and Twitter. And I'll send it to you,
Facebook.
So right now they're just gathering information about what people would like to see in their franchise fee, what people would like to see from their energy provider, and then they'll take all that and the draft agreement will be coming out in April. And then it has to go through council, but then hopefully by October or January, we can get it approved by the California Commission that oversees all of the utility providers. So yeah, call your council members. I guess, if you have anything else to say, but also fill out the survey that we have next slide. Oh, and then, yeah, Lee is a little nerdy. Okay, so and then he wanted to end on a high note, and this is the energy of the past, you know, dirty, gross, and then he put in the energy of the future. Next slide. Oh, solar panels.
Batteries.
Yeah. but there's some good stuff in the appendixes of this as well.
Great.
So does anyone have any questions about the franchise fee process, what it is, what it means? Yeah.
Is it an RFP or like an RFI that's going out, and is it possible that SDG&E doesn't win the proposal?
If we didn't do a franchise fee with SDG&E, we would have to buy everything back from them.
The city buys it back?
Yeah, the city would have to buy it.
And then resells it to another.
It would be like billions of dollars.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think we do that, but I think there are competing energy. I think it is outside,
yeah.
But I think SDG&E is
there is an interest in it, and I love that we get to do this together. so there is a timeline on my slide that will show that you submitted, that will come out.
Okay, good.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and how this relates to the community choice?
So community choice is run by the state, and then provided, like SDG&E just provides us our power. The
mm-hmm.
state is the one who's actually purchasing the power.
Well, the community choice aggregator
purchased
the power.
Purchasing the power.
And then SDG&E delivers it.
And then SDG&E gives it to us. Yeah, there we go.
You're awesome.
Yeah.
I think the only undergrounding in Ocean Beach is between Abbott Street and the beach.
Mm-hmm.
Can't we have more undergrounding?
There's nothing over on my
side. Have to look at the map. Yeah, the only things I saw were like one of five projects completed.
Yeah.
I don't think anything was fully completed
yeah.
or undergrounded in the yet. But I take a look at that map
mm-hmm.
when you have the time.
So what kinds of questions or what kinds of feedback do they want from us? Okay.
I'm going to take it after tonight. But I think it would be, yeah, how like general questions about, yeah, how is your energy bill affecting like you? How is the prices? What's your use like?
Yeah.
Have you taken the survey yet?
No, but my understanding of just there's a lot of cities actually going through franchise fee renegotiations, and there's just like a lot of opportunity for asking the utility to do something else with that fee.
Mm-hmm.
And so the example from Chula Vista where they said, well, we'll give you this contract again, but we want you to like allocate some money for parks.
Yeah.
And so
mm-hmm.
other cities have done things like asking the utility to put in money for like energy efficiency upgrade programming
mm-hmm.
for the city or to cost share things with the city. Salt Lake City and Rocky Mountain Power have sort of a partnership that's that was negotiated in tandem with their franchise agreement, where Rocky Mountain Power sort of agreed to work with Salt Lake City to get to 100% renewable electricity by a certain date. And so there's just, it's an opportunity to re-engage with the utility and ask for different things than, you know, they had previously had as part of their planning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There was a slide in there that said San Diego pays the highest franchise fee out of any city in California. Did your contact talk to that at all? I'm kind of curious why that was.
Yeah, so, well, again, I think it's because we have the extra undergrounding fee.
No, but even the base fee.
Yeah, they have an undergrounding
fee. It's terrible and all that. I look at my ugly ass pool every day.
I know, Sacramento and LA pay franchise fees less than us, but I don't know what they get out of it. I just have this
realistic. And I think our undergrounding is for wildfire prevention.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, so I think...
low priority.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, exactly. Like the high fire areas.
But we're
first,
paying for it.
Yes.
Kind of randomized and prioritized.
But we all benefit from that, because when there's obviously not wildfires,
yeah,
even in East County, we all have better air quality, and that's better for San Diego overall.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I guess I was just curious why that
why
is so high.
Yeah.
Well, if you actually, so PG&E has not done much planning around wildfires, and they're now shutting off power to like millions of people at a time to prevent wildfires, rather than having invested over the last 10 years to underground a lot of the infrastructure, because PG&E's towers are sparking fires up north now. And we're fortunate that, I guess, fortunate that in 2003 we had really big wildfires, and now PG&E's been investing.
I remember the rolling blackouts of the 90s.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Isn't it great? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and, yeah, and then they don't get as much.
Yeah, they don't get as much money in parks and stuff.
Yeah.
But I understand, because it is almost like pretty much a direct tax on us. But then again, it is also paying for our cops and our firefighters and our lifeguards.
It goes into the pot.
Another way to tax.
I don't like paying tax.
Can everyone do you need up? And these nice ladies have more answers to your questions.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. That was fabulous. I think Lee has an expanding team now. That's exciting.
Yeah.
My name is Vanessa Garcia. I manage public affairs for the City of San Diego for SDG&E. So what that means is I just have a portfolio of projects, infrastructure, programs, and everything.
So that you can face them and us at the same time?
Yeah,
yes, that would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. And I will hand out some fact sheets at the end, but I don't want to over-consume you guys' information for the moment. Some of the things that we're going to talk about are duplications, so I'm going to try to go through it a little fast so that I don't use your time up. But on the next slide, so we are talking about the franchise agreement.
I'm
going to
hang up here.
Thank you.
Yes, we're on the next slide. Okay, appreciate it. Thank you. There's also a laser pointer.
So I agree 100% with Jenna's comments in terms of this being a real opportunity to revitalize and refresh a 50-year agreement and build a modern franchise. And there's some things that I can note from your examples in this presentation, but also some things that I want to clarify. So I 100% agree. Some of this is redundant with what Andrew already shared, but we have our original agreement that is in place right now, the latest 50-year agreement that was initiated in 1971. And it was approved a year later by the California Public Utilities Commission. And that agreement is what set us up for a 3% franchise fee, which is higher than other franchise fees across the nation. And that really was because the City of San Diego was a charter city. And so they had the means to go about as a council and then towards the PUC asking for what was above California franchise law, which was a 1-2% franchise fee. So they elected to ask for that 3% franchise fee, which the Public Utilities Commission approved. So that's what that is, and then the city charter says, as Andrea already noted, 65% or 75% goes to the general fund and 25% goes to the environmental growth fund, and the city elects to do with that as they wish. That is a fee that we pay basically to lease the right of way to put the infrastructure below the ground and above. So in 2002, there was an opener clause in the franchise agreement pretty much saying, hey, we're going to go back to the council and ask them if there's anything else that they'd like to do and see out of this agreement. And that is when, at the time, it was not a strong mayor's home of government, it was Mayor Dick Murphy who said, we'd love to put before the council an additional amount of money to accelerate undergrounding. and that is a 3.5% underground surcharge that's put on the just City of San Diego customer bills. Why? Because at the time, other cities like Chula Vista, I think it was Santee, El Cajon, had said, we really don't want to be socializing that 3.5% onto our customers who will not be reaping that benefit for the underground, right? Because every city, just so you know, is on top of their amount that everyone receives for undergrounding. It's a ratio, right? So not under, overhead underground. So this is an additional amount. And so that, again, went on to the California Public Utilities Commission, and it was a big effort, but it was achieved and approved, and so cumulatively, 6.5% franchise fee, that equates to like $11 on every customer's bill on average, and that's an average when I say residential customer. And it's about $130 million of benefit to the city a year. And so half of that is pretty much, you know, 3% for franchise fee, and half of that is undergrounding. Undergrounding is exclusively used undergrounding, obviously. So this is the same timeline that Lee kind of put forward in terms of, you know, this is what has been publicly released, but just in a different format. So the city will be presenting a draft agreement to the city council in April, and that agreement will be then issued to bidders, other responders, including SDG&E, in the form of an invitation to bid, which is kind of like an RFP. So you'd ask that question in May or June. And then ultimately our goal is really to have a final agreement authorized by the council in September. I shouldn't say our goal, but the city's goal, and SDG&E, you know, appreciates the idea that there is some bake time there for PUC approval if necessary. It would go to the PUC if there are material changes. The risk in that really is that this PUC, which I appreciate as a consumer, is really focused on affordability of rates, right? So the PUC is the one that approves every 5 years. This is what PG&E, as you mentioned, other utilities such as SDG&E, need to charge to manage our responsibility, which is safe, reliable, and clean energy, right? So we only receive funds when we've actually shown accountability for doing that. And we only are approved for rates that can achieve that, in addition to other things like legislative mandates, in addition to other things like public purpose programs, medical baseline, care customers, all that. So anyways, they evaluate this holistically, is my point, because they have to think, you know, what are other cities also looking at? So that's the baked-in schedule. I 100% agree with some of the comments that were already raised about modernizing the franchise agreement and aligning with state and local climate goals is really important. And I think that's something SDG&E is really committed to. We fully support the city's community choice aggregation program. And by doing that, we're supporting in terms of sharing best practices approaches, helping to support in terms of the streamlining of customer outreach and education, the billing that will be transitioning onto, you know, our bills and managing the actual information systems communication. All of that is something that we're working in close alignment. But we really believe that enabling the architecture, the grid of the future, the transmission and distribution lines that connect to the city, really needs to be a strong partner that can manage and facilitate and maintain that in the longevity to achieve these goals. The city right now receives, like all cities, 45% renewable energy from SDG&E. The state has SB 100 calling for 60% renewable by 2030. The city's climate action plan calls for 100% by 2035. And then at this moment, because obviously legislation can change, 2045 is the goal for zero carbon by the state. So in our view, ensuring that there's a long-term provider, a minimum 25 years to achieve that term, is important, because you also want to be maintaining the grid that the public is asking for, but also that the city is aligning for, whether that be microgrids, industrial solar, because it does have to be industrial for SDG&E to count it into our portfolio. Although residential does help, I 100% agree from an environmental perspective, and we fully support that. It's not counted from a renewable portfolio standard that the state takes credit for, that the entity can take credit for. Because we need to do it at an industrial level. Our responsibility is to make that industrial level commitment. So making those investments in terms of battery storage projects, electric vehicle projects, you want to make sure you have a company that can really manage and maintain that asset, that investment in infrastructure for the full lifespan of that equipment, right? That's the purpose of that slide. And then prioritizing safety and reliability. This is something that we obviously have many lessons learned in from the 2007 wildfires, and I think everyone reads the media to some degree to understand that we've really been pioneering in terms of wildfire mitigation management. We can pretty much, you had mentioned earlier, isolate and locate through the 191 weather stations where a fire is taking place or where it's at risk. We have vegetation management that can really now like isolate that in the future and kind of show trends and patterns, and so we really manage that and also feed that information to the fire departments, to all of those public safety first responders, so that they don't have to be deploying assets where they, you know, are not needed and like trailing down fires. They can actually get there in advance and isolate in an acute way, you know, where crews are really needed. And so it's a strong partnership. Really happy about the numerous benefits of those technologies. We were the first utility to basically start a meteorology department, and now it has grown. It's pretty exciting. And now we use drone technology and other things to really put those cameras to work and use it for a lot of different other maintenance. So that's our 24/7 responsibility, safety and reliability. The modern grid, clean technologies, this is evolving, and this conversation at the state is really evolving in this level. The legislature and the PUC have really supported SDG&E to do a lot of pilot programs that have enabled us to lead in terms of battery storage. We have almost 100 megawatts of battery storage. It's really closer to 85, sorry. I always say 100 and that's wrong of me. That's already been deployed in the region. At one point, we had the largest battery storage project in Escondido. We are going to be putting another battery storage project in Kearney Mesa. All of that is also done in partnership in some degree with the cities, right? Because we need their support with permitting. We work with them on seeing if there's opportunities to put it in their sites. But we have to understand that this technology still is pretty big. It's robust. It's a lot of land commitment. It's a big asset. And so, but it also doesn't necessarily, at this point in time, offset the entire grid, right? But it is an advancement that we're making, and making that investment does save customers money. I want to also talk about the renewable meter adapter. Our commitment really isn't to tell you to get solar. Our commitment is to make sure that once you've decided to make that choice, we help you reap the benefit of that back. So we have this adapter that was enabled for a solar home. It's supposed to make it so you don't have to make those costly investments to upgrade your panel to connect the solar panel to your electricity meter. And then our commitment really is to make sure once you go through all your city inspections and you get it installed, that we connect you to, so you can start to get that benefit, you know, in the investment that you've made to your bill within 24 hours. So that's what that adapter does. That's a lot of what the technology is and our responsibility. Tracking all of that and making sure that we're aligning in cities' shared climate goals is another one of our big plans, right? And I shouldn't say plans, but something that we're already working on in terms of adapting opportunities for state goals for electric vehicles with city goals for municipal fleet, right? So those pilot programs are out there for medium heavy duty, for cities, for, I think we have a pilot that will be rolled out later on this year for state parks and beaches. It's pretty exciting, and schools. So all of those are made definitely with a lot of conversations with our municipalities, because we serve 2 counties and 27 cities. This slide is really intended to give you an idea of how other cities are doing in terms of renewables. This is the big topic of this franchise in terms of, you know, how is SDG&E trending with some of the other cities? And so I mentioned we're at 45% renewables. This chart shows 44. There are sometimes we're at 100% renewables, to be honest, because it's very variable. It's just like the market. But that's what we can report to the PUC. We're really proud that we have no coal in our portfolio, and we haven't for a lot of years. Don't have a hydroelectric portfolio, and then we have a small unspecified, a lot towards natural gas, and that really does enable the future. And I think that the city CCA intends some of that as well. And then other districts for your review. I think this might be older. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm wrong. This is a summary of what I already shared: our portfolio standards, energy storage, EcoChoice is a program that enables customers, especially those multifamily homes that can't make the investment or really want to go green, they can elect to add on to their bill that they want to support beyond the 45% renewable. They want to support 75 or 100% renewable energy. So they make that election, and it actually right now is a deduction on your bill of a couple dollars, but and we talked a little bit about alternate fuel vehicles, basically electric vehicles, and the investments that we're making. Undergrounding was referenced, so I'll stop here for just a quick second. City of San Diego is 74% undergrounding. I can get back to you on the projects that we have in the city. And
it's got to
be like the whole county.
Sorry,
it's not Ocean Beach.
No, it's 74 in the whole county, right?
Sorry.
Yeah.
I think because I was meeting with the council member, we were talking about a project in Fairmont, so I apologize. But yeah, in Ocean Beach, we can tell you at least the projects in District 2, I should say, to be honest. I don't have
it in my team. Okay. Because we have like zero in OB.
No, that might be the case.
Oh, okay.
We have a little bit.
2%. Okay, I'll give you 2%.
But of the city, 74% and 26% is still overhead. That's all governed by the California Public Utilities Commission Rule 22. We have adopted a plan since 2018 on accelerating beyond what we've done. When I started managing the city, several years ago, we were at an average 6 miles a year. It's really based upon how we work with the city in terms of how staff manage, bring things to council, what goes to design, and community outreach, blah, blah, blah. So,
and then Lee did mention that the city is running a pilot program to see if they can underground more efficiently and cheaper than SGPUD right now. So they have like 6 pilot programs out to see if they can do it.
That's cool.
Yeah. True that. And so some of the best practices that we've worked on together in collaboration are really about accelerating. So what we've done is we've presented the city some opportunities to basically lower some of the costs and manage streamlining.
Yeah.
And so the last 2 years we had a quadruple the amount of pretty well. We are the largest union employer in the region, and I think that we're really proud of them. I want to make sure that they have job security for the amount of experience they have in managing and maintaining the grid. Advanced grid architecture in terms of supporting community choice energy, that is really important. I think in that slide that I shared with the city of statewide goals is there to describe that. Supporting the city's climate action plan, we accelerate undergrounding. I elaborated on that. This slide pretty much summarizes what we believe is an important part of this franchise. And obviously, your body can inform your elected official of what you think is important. But those are some of the things that we wanted to share with you and highlight from our experience. So thank you for your time. I don't know if you have any questions.
I have a totally weird one, but I had somebody ask me, is there any cost to homeowners if the lines are on somebody's property? So,
sorry, we have 10 more minutes left to vote, so if anyone hasn't voted yet.
Okay. Like, is there any cost to the homeowner if the homeowner, if they have to come in and rip out a pole and they, damage some of the property that the pole is on, or, for example, some of you have been to my house, we have a pole that's right on the corner of our property. And stuff has been built around that pole, unfortunately. So when SDG&E comes to rip out that pole and dig a trench and do whatever they're going to have to do, some of our property is going to be damaged. So is that a cost that SDG&E is going to be responsible for, or is the homeowner responsible for that? Do you know?
Private property is typically the homeowner.
Okay.
Because we only have the easement responsibility for maintaining the line. But it's really case by case. I can't tell you that I've had I have these examples and these issues a lot where somebody builds a deck onto their home and the line is literally right here and the deck is here and we're like, oh my gosh, this is not safe.
yeah.
We work with development services in the city a lot to just manage, how we can really better educate on the permitting, but also educate on the safety and reliability as these projects, as people evolve their home, because people are doing what they, not necessarily always.
Yeah. Yeah, this one little corner of the property was built in the 70s, and the pole was there, so they just kind of,
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I understand
100%.
Okay. Every day, yes.
Okay.
I don't know. I can't give you a straight answer.
That's fine. Okay.
I have a clarifying question and a follow-up question. Does the franchise fee also get charged on the gas network?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no,
as you probably know, CPUC opened a proceeding on transitioning away from gas. So I guess what is SDG&E's plan for moving away from gas infrastructure, and how does franchise fee maybe help with that?
That's a good question. This franchise agreement at this point in time hasn't necessarily dealt in the conversation of removing gas dependency, right? We really believe in customer choice at this point in time, and I can't tell you what the future lies on that. I think that right now, we need natural gas to enable and catalyze that amount of renewable energy. And right now we don't have, I can't tell you that the procurement team, so the city will have its own procurement team, right, with the CCA, but our existing procurement team has contracts in place for renewable, wind, solar, right? And obviously battery storage can enable some of that. But our role is to basically ensure that you always have the amount of energy you need, and we have to plan for 15% above peak, and make sure that we have a grid that can withstand and deliver that, and we also, at all times, and then we also have to make sure that we have the commodity purchase at a reasonable rate. And so those two indicators show us that at this point in time, natural gas is essential for that because of the variableness of renewables, right? Because that 4-9 window is really right now being solved by natural gas.
Do you have a lot of storage on the grid for renewable energy once it's created?
A lot, but not enough for the entire service territory. So that's the 84 megawatts that I mentioned, and I think that we have a plan for an additional 166 megawatts that's not indicated there, that we have some pilot plans in the work. Some of like COGIS is a conversation with San Diego Water Authority, so there's some customer owned assets, obviously. So the region as a whole is growing in that, but that is definitely not nearly enough. And just so you know, for us to actually do those projects, we need approval by the California Public Utilities Commission to socialize that on the rates, obviously. So they're seeing technology shifts, and they're not necessarily, you know, adopting that. Also, you had mentioned something like new agreements and land and parks. Our responsibility for the land we own is to make sure that we're not asking you as ratepayers, as me as a consumer as well, to buy more land than necessarily, to build more substations or more things than necessarily. So we have to manage the land that we have prudently, and with density issues, it's getting harder and harder. So we do what we can to give access to corridors and whatnot, but to be honest, it's really hard to take it away if you ever need it once you've given it up for a park. So we're going through that right now, and the Utilities Commission is making it a little more challenging for us to donate land, or give land, I should say, access to land, to be honest. And there's a lot of environmental groups that actually don't want us to give access because they want it to be preserved for wildlife, right? For environmental reasons. So it's kind of all the time. But going back to your question, natural gas, I mean, the easiest way to put it for you is that we will operate the gas lines for as long as they're needed that our mandate requires. And if the PUC changes that decision, then obviously we would have to move in step. And then should the CCA no longer, you know, procure that, which I don't believe is their intention at this moment, because they also have to meet their commitment in terms of rates and affordability, which has nothing to do with us, right? But that will obviously shift the entire climate.
So, and I have one more question, but there's also gas lines that bring gas directly into our buildings, and so that's not part of the electricity supply, that's direct gas service. Is that covered by the franchise fee as well, like, and the agreement?
So the franchise fee is based on gross receipts. So what you guys consume, so in the new CCA, you guys consume more or less. People are consuming a little bit less based upon time of use, which is something that the state wants. The state wants to move kind of like recycling, right? They want to incentivize you to recycle more, and so you're going to pay less for recycling. So the state wants us to look at how to consume less energy when it's more cost, so they want to start educating people that the market rate for energy is variable and it's not consistent. So anyway,
is that because you have to be purchasing your energy at a higher rate from other generators?
That's because of two things. You don't want to make there is more things that are going, we're plugging in more things that need more energy, right? We're just as consumers using more energy, and they don't want, which they shouldn't, we don't want either, to have to build out more infrastructure, more transmission lines, more substations, more transformers. And also because, yes, we want to make sure that people have price signals on affordability. That's what the state wants. That's what the Public Utilities Commission wants for all the utilities that they govern. So that's why we have time of use. It's not just something that SDG&E is rolling out, if that answers your question.
Yeah.
But in terms of natural gas, I think that it's an evolving conversation.
To put it in a different way, certain people have suspicion that somehow it's a profit gouge.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question.
Yeah.
We make no money, nor are we allowed to. The regulation happened a long time ago on commodity, and nor will the CCA, to my knowledge, but they won't. The CCA will not be governed by the California Public Utilities Commission. They'll be governed by a board of your elected officials across five cities. We are not allowed, nor do we. We straight pass-through. So we, you're a renewable solar provider. We review. We make sure that you can provide what you say you're going to provide through your contract. And if you don't meet that contract, our producer is responsible to deal with that, right? But anyways, all of that is straight pass-through. It's not. There's no mark there.
It's a giant bug.
If all of the rates and the cost for both gas and electricity is governed by body, by agencies, how come, I don't think I've ever seen an electrical or gas bill that doesn't have a rate increase included in the envelope? So how come you're constantly...
That's an awesome question. That's an awesome question. So how it works is, traditionally, on a three-year cycle, but we just got approved for a five-year cycle, we get approved for a general rate case. And that rate is supposed to say, is the infrastructure project, the projects, the programs. Sometimes what happens is that the commission says, to my understanding, you need to, there's seasonal rates, right? So they request that we do seasonal rates. And so the rate increases might be by season. In addition to that, there might be a true-up time period because of the fact that the commission waited to review because they really do have a lot on their plate. And I understand that it's a very slow process with them, but they have more than just energy providers that they are responsible for regulating. So they take longer than they need to, and so our, let's say, for instance, this year, probably almost a year delayed or more, so we have to now true up what we had discussed that we were going to be charging at the beginning of 2020, if that makes sense. So that's one reason. The second reason is pilot programs as well, right? So we were asked to add on electric vehicle pilot program. We added two additional electric vehicle pilot programs. All those things are approved by the California Public Utilities Commission. So there's different rate models. For instance, like when they expanded the amount of solar energy customers that would receive benefits, that obviously, like, then had to get added back. those customers' bills that don't have solar energy. So there are some one-offs, is what I'm trying to share with you, in addition to that. And all of that is governed by the... And there is a big affordability proceeding right now with the commission, which I'm really looking forward to rolling out. There's a lot of proceedings, though. There's an underground proceeding. There's so many things that are happening. And the solar proceeding... I hope that that helps a little bit with some of the perspective of the amount of things that are fluctuating. I don't know how you are on time. I don't know.
It's okay, you keep going. But yeah, I think we have a really cool night, so we're well above or well out of schedule. I had you going on at 7:20.
So I'm not entirely sure that you answered Jenna's question about the natural gas lines. They kind of got looped around. So could you?
On the distribution lines for gas.
It's distribution lines for gas, and specifically we're bringing gas for heating and hot water and cooking directly into our buildings. And actually, if you look at pretty much every carbon neutrality or 80x50 plan out there, you have to electrify most everything and move away from the gas infrastructure. So that's a huge stranded cost that we've invested in all this gas infrastructure, all these pipelines bringing gas to our buildings. We need to figure out how to move away from that infrastructure, stop building more of it, right? Because if we keep building it now, it's going to be a stranded cost over time.
To my knowledge, the state has not approved that piece of legislation, and it's part of a...
Yeah, it's part of a proceeding.
Exactly.
But all of the state's climate planning research basically finds no other pathway to carbon neutrality without moving away from gas.
Okay.
and electrifying, using the renewable energy in the electric system.
And it's a big conversation that's 100% above my pay grade, because I have to tell you, we do manage and we are obligated to provide distribution of gas to homes. And so if you're a restaurant, if you're anyone that uses natural gas, you know, if you have natural gas in your home because you have a gas stove, for instance, can you imagine you would have to make the personal investment and cost to move to an electric stove?
Well, that's a policy.
On your own.
That's not necessarily true. Like, there are policy options that would not require personal
purchase. Yes, one thing is new build and one thing is existing build. So if we're talking about new build, I don't think that's been adopted yet. New buildings, I understand that there is a position to move towards that. And I think that wouldn't change the existing infrastructure or distribution that we already have in our... because you have to think, if you're a developer and you're building a new build, you're actually paying the cost of putting the gas and electric to the home. It's not SDG&E, you're paying for that, right? For the most part, unless if you buy an existing home, if that law changes, then that would be the cost burden that individual consumer, resident, business, multifamily home would have to make. Mm-hmm. So that's what the legislature and the PUC is considering. But then you also have to consider the impact to your bill, right? So the PUC is responsible for looking at affordability, as I mentioned. And so right now, natural gas is significantly more affordable than electricity.
Not when combined with a high-efficiency heat pump, but that's fine.
In terms of a rate scenario, yes. In terms of a procurement scenario, yes. I hear you on many other factors, but when people ask us for what their rate scenario will be, that's my responsibility is to educate them on, yes, your rate scenario would look very different. My home would probably triple. Every home is different because you might have a gas heater versus an electric heater versus... I can't tell you what scenarios there are, but ultimately, my home I know would triple in cost. And so, there's other incentives. People could consider solar, an electric vehicle. So there's a lot of technology conversations happening at one time, and that's really, it's a big conversation at the commission. I was just actually on an advocacy trip in Sacramento, and the committee consultant came and briefed us all on all those conversations, really saying, I don't like to pat ourselves on the back too much, but she really said that all the other utilities are really going to be grappling with growing in their rates the way SDG&E has, just because we've been leading the way for so long. And now that they're going to have to make everybody swim in that direction, those are going to be big conversations. And if we make everyone have an electric vehicle, everyone have solar, how do we then manage the grid for that? Do I have to build out the grid for that? I can't tell you the amount. I know I love your question because you're forward thinking on where we need to go. And I think everyone wants to go there, but if we go there all at the same time, we have to manage the affordability question ultimately, I think, and understand that there's a lot of people that, want to go there. We have to I believe we have to support choice, personally. That's not an SDG&E mission right now. Our SDG&E plan is to continue to support state and city mandated climate action plan goals, to continue to lead in all of these areas and evolve where we can.
So this franchise fee is purely rate-based? Is that what you're saying for the gas and electric?
No. The franchise is...
Or consumption-based, sorry. It's a
consumption-based.
It's a rate based on my consumption. If I don't consume, I don't pay towards a franchise fee.
That's one aspect. That's about 30% of the franchise fee is based on consumption. So I'm sorry I spent the majority of the time on that. The other roughly almost 60%, and I used to have a pie chart for this. Do I have a pie chart for this? Oh. Is this the city revenue side? No, I don't. I used to have a pie chart for this. I can share it with you later on. But 17% of rates are about state mandates, to be honest. About 30%, a little over than that, it's consumption-based in terms of the gross revenue. So if I give you the pie of gross revenue and how the city gets this franchise fee every year. And then the rest of it is transmission and distribution. So the maintenance, making sure that the crews that maintain the grid operate the grid and also make advancements to the grid. So that could be new infrastructure and of the like.
All right, so in 20 years, I'm going to disconnect from the grid entirely. I'm not going to pay any of your fees. I'm going to be... you're going to be losing your base that pays that. You're going to have a depreciating asset buried underground, similar to the gas. You're going to have, maybe people already do that now, that are going off-grid and can go off-grid. I think that's going to be a strong trend, at least for small residential developments. So.
I don't discount that we might move to batteries. I think there's still going to need a place for the batteries to charge. There's still going to be a need for infrastructure of some sort. Yeah. But if your question is what related to this franchise, yes, that would significantly reduce the amount that the city receives from this franchise agreement in terms of how this agreement is structured.
So I would
right now, the city depends about 6% of their whole general fund is this, but if you were to add to that the undergrounding, and then in addition to that, I don't have it on me, but there is a huge economic investment of SDG&E in the region as just one of the largest employers, right? So there's supplier diversity, there's what we give to public-private partnerships, there's other investments in technology and whatnot. So
I get it. I would advocate for a short time frame on this because 50 years... 30
yeah.
years.
And the city's like,
25. We may all have Tesla coils on our roofs, but I don't know.
And so I'll leave you guys with this fact sheet that kind of just covers a little bit of what I shared today, just in case. And I'll be happy to share that with everyone.
You can leave some copies on the table right next to you. Okay, we will be, like I said, tweeting out, Facebooking, putting on our website the link to fill out the survey so you can get feedback to the city about what you would like to see in this franchise fee. As much involvement as possible. Okay, and thank you guys for coming out. Okay, we're going to move to chair announcements. I have just one announcement. Next month we'll be certifying the election results and then re-electing our executive board. So everyone, I guess, think about who you want in charge, who you want taking the notes, who's in charge of the money. So we'll do that next month, and then we'll see all of our new board members, so that should be fun. Do I have a treasurer's report?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
There is currently $1,129.08 due to the cost of the float and some of the other items. Once this $215 that was allocated for the P.O. Box rental has been paid, we're going to be awfully close to maxing out the $500 reimbursement from the city. And so I'm going to look to see if it's time to submit receipts based on how close we are to getting over that $500.
So we get a budget of $500 a year, and then we are allowed to send in receipts for $500, and then that's it, right?
The city will reimburse up to $500 on submission of verified receipts.
Gotcha. Okay.
We put together an operating budget for the last couple of years of just what our receipts have been.
Maybe more. I think I can probably.
Do I have a report from PRC or a financial report?
No report.
Good. Secretary, anything? Anything?
Not secretary like.
Okay. I have a report.
Historical
The Historical Society is having the Wisteria Garden Party, and it will be Sunday, March 22nd from 1 to 3 p.m. And if you're a member of the Ocean Beach Historical Society, it's $15. If you're a non-member, it's $25, but that includes your membership fee. And we have snacks and entertainment. It's a wonderful affair. Jesus, it's at Ned Titlow, who had a place on Narragansett, is now rented by Pat and Susan James. And the Wisteria is there on their property.
That's
on Niagara. Yeah.
It does sound beautiful.
Virginia, do we have any meetings with forestry? But they are pushing ahead with the Arbor Day. And last year, I highly recommend it. Last year I went and I actually got to meet my silent Smokey Bear was there.
Oh!
It was really fun. And that's obviously
April. Give a hoot, don't forget.
Yeah. So we'll keep it on our calendars and it'll probably be after the next meeting. All right. Anyone else go to any meetings?
I wanted to thank you for stepping up to the Mission Bay meeting. I was supposed to go, but there was a weird technical glitch. I totally apologize. I feel very embarrassed because I was supposed to go and advocate for the bike lane repairs, but Andrea actually was there, and she stepped up, and she made the plea for it, and I just wanted to thank you for that because I got your text at 6:15, and I was like, what? I thought that was Thursday. So, yeah, it was kind of a mess, but I apologize. Thank you for stepping up.
And I'll follow up with you about that. I'm going to respond to Nicole's email.
Okay. And then for the Arts and Culture Commission, we had a meeting last Friday, and Ron Salisbury, who is our poet laureate now, we have a two-year term poet laureate, he actually came and he introduced himself and he talked about you know, what he was kind of tasked with doing for the community, and he read three poems that I have to say I almost lost it on sitting at the board table because they were so emotionally touching and so incredibly well written that I want to utilize him for Ocean Beach as much as I can. So if anybody has any ideas where we can like use a poet laureate or have a poet laureate come to OB and speak, or you know, whatever, I was thinking maybe suggesting for the Christmas parade, see if he could write a poem for Ocean Beach and have it as like something very distinct.
OB and AMC, if they have speech time.
Yeah. I mean, I think it would be a wonderful idea to kind of incorporate, you know, something that the city is doing, and you know.
Also, he hosts a writers group in OB weekly, so
yeah.
He has connections to OB.
I mean, he's just he was so wonderful, and it was such a great experience, and I love being on this commission, by the way. but yeah, you know, if we can try to come up with ideas for him, and you know, I'm trying to talk to the women's club about getting him to come and you know give a presentation too. So very exciting, and I'm hoping to work more with just other ideas and other people in OB that are art connected.
It's a very forward-thinking program that the city started with the board, and I think if he's got Ocean Beach connections, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
To highlight his community through his excellence, because he is renowned as a poet, not just locally, but...
He was so wonderful. I mean, literally, I had tears in my eyes, and I was like, I'm going to lose my shit. You know, like...
we'll reach out to Denny, then, because I know they're still putting everything together for that.
Yay.
Okay, so without further ado, I think this meeting is adjourned.
Oh, do we do the election results?
Have you guys counted and tallied everything, or are you still working?
Did you stop by the PO box?
I did. There was like 5 mail-in ballots.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
These things are recording, guys. Yeah. And they filled
cool. Excited.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Oh. Yeah. Woo!
Who could it be?
Anybody unopposed was re-elected.
I think there was two contests.
One was with me.
So. I voted for myself.
Which is good. I forgot to vote for myself one year.
Do
you want to come up here?
Yeah. All right.
Okay, Tracy was re-elected.
Yay!
Virginia was re-elected.
Yay!
Anthony was re-elected. Was re-elected.
Yay!
Andrea, you got your at-large.
Thank God.
Say you had more votes than anybody else.
How many votes did you get? 28. You got four more than me.
Nicole.
Nicole, what district are you
one
in now?
And Kevin
seven.
And Jane are one vote apart.
Oh.
Kevin had 8 and Jane had 7.
Oh, my God.
I voted. Did you vote?
Yeah.
Did you vote for me?
Oh, that's so nice.
I saw it.
I see.
Okay, because we still have spoilers.
Yeah, is that okay?
Yeah, there's still a spot for her.
Yeah,
I'm
telling you.
If
you were the second most vote-getter, you get the seat. So
congratulations.
You're not going anywhere. Not going anywhere.